you, Chorazin. Woe to you, Bethsaida. For if the mighty works which were done in you had been done in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. And I might remind you, Tyre and Sidon would be Gentile cities. But I say to you, it will be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the day of judgment than for you. And you, Capernaum, who are exalted to heaven, will be brought down to Hades. For if the mighty works which were done in you had been done in Sodom, it would have remained until this day. Again, Jesus is addressing stubbornness and hard-headedness, hard-heartedness that has rejected the overtures of God to hear Him both through John and through Jesus Himself. One other verse, in verse 25, He mentions the fact, as Marty said, Jesus then turns and prays to God. And He says, I thank You, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because You have hidden these things from the wise and the prudent. I'll say some more about who these people are in just a moment. But I would say as a whole, who Jesus is talking about here, and the Jewish leadership, and the cities of Galilee that rejected Him, and those that are wise and prudent, are those that measured things only by human standards. People who were full of themselves and trusted in their own wisdom and judgment and knowledge. And it caused them to reject the things of God. But then in verse 25, Jesus introduces another class of people. He says that God has hidden these things from the wise and prudent and have revealed them to babes. And this, I think, begins to introduce who exactly Jesus is issuing this great invitation to. Or maybe more clearly, who is more prone to accept the invitation. The invitation, I'm sure, is being extended universally and everyone potentially is subject to it. But I think Jesus acknowledges only certain people are actually going to hear it. Only certain ones are going to see the importance of it and understand it more deeply and thus respond to it. And in verse 25, He calls them babes. But in verse 28, more particularly now to the invitation that He's extending, He says, Come to Me, all you who labor and are heavy laden. And now we're getting back to the riddle. Those that are burdened. Jesus is addressing people who labor and are heavy laden. That might describe somebody who's come to be with us this morning. It might describe a lot of somebodies who are here. Examine your own heart. Did you come here this morning with a burdened spirit? Did you come here this morning with something less than lightness in your heart? Have you brought your troubles with you? Do you feel weighed down? And I'll tell you, life can do it. This life, with all of its cares and worries, with all of its hardship, with all of its labor, and so often seemingly unproductive. The anxiety sometimes is just there perpetually and it doesn't seem to be relieved. The burdens, once we get through one, there's another waiting to take its place. And it's wearisome, this life is. And so Jesus is calling those who labor and are heavy laden. And I don't think that He's talking about those that have long work weeks, per se. I think He's talking about a deeper heaviness of spirit. A deeper sense of burden and labor in this world. And in chapter 12, I think He goes on and gives some examples of that. Matthew does. In talking about two illustrations of souls that are labored and burdened by life. He speaks in chapter 12, verse 1, and then down in verses 9 and following, of those who were burdened and labored by a sense of strict legalism. They had the Son of God in their midst. They saw Him work miracles. And yet they were so burdened by a legalistic sense of being right inside of God, dotting every I and crossing every T and making sure that you dealt with every detail of the law, and that became your righteousness. So burdened were they by that ball and chain that even when Jesus came into their midst, the Son of God, and demonstrated who He was, and demonstrated a proper understanding of the Sabbath, they found fault with him. So chained were they to their sense of righteousness. And I think Jesus is talking about those that are burdened by failed human standards of knowledge and philosophy. Back in verse 25, again, he says that the things of God are hidden from the wise and prudent. Does that mean people that are intelligent can't understand the gospel? Well, no. I think he's talking about a sense of self-dependent wisdom that looks to this world and its ideas and its philosophies and its reasoning to discover the true way to live. And so these might be people that have tried every self-help scheme that there is. Maybe that's you. Maybe you're struggling with a particular problem. There's something burdening your soul and weighing you down. It's causing you some kind of trouble, and you read every magazine that you might be able to find. You search on the internet for the latest human explanation as to how to deal with this particular problem. You search for the next happiness guru who tells you how to let go of the burdens of life. How not to be an enabler, a popular term these days. How not to burden yourself by taking on the burdens of everybody else. Or how to stand up for yourself and say no and take control of your schedule. Or whatever it may be. There's a magazine, there's an article, there's something on the internet for everything that's troubling us in this life. The problem is most of it is wrong. And we keep searching and keep looking, we keep searching and keep looking, and we never seem to be able to cut off the ball and chain that we're dragging around. And I think Jesus is also talking about someone else that's burdened here. People that are burdened by their sins. So deeply affected in their conscience that they just can't seem to have any confidence or lightness of spirit, any sense of assurance in this life. They've not found it in strict religious legalism. Because no matter how strictly you keep the Sabbath day, there's still a sense that I haven't done something truly to be restored to God. There's a sense of being inadequate spiritually. I don't think it's always recognized because we tend to attribute the heaviness of spirit to something else, something more superficial. And yet I think this really is where Jesus is inviting men. When you have not found relief for the deep burdens of your soul in the things of this world, in the philosophies of this life, in strict religious legalism, in some self-help guru, when you get to the point where you're so burdened down and you realize this world does not offer any real solutions, come to me. Come to me. I'll help you with that. And so there is good news, gospel, good news in what Jesus is saying here. The good news is if you're spiritually weary, if you're empty of true purpose in your life, if you're confused because you've heard so many conflicting solutions to your problem, you are the kind of person to whom Jesus reveals the Father. You are in the category of the babes that he mentions in verse 25. Again, he's thanking God, his Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and prudent, and have revealed them to babes. People who just simply will come to God and say, I'm lost, I'm confused, I'm empty, there are no answers in this world. Please help me understand what this is about. Please help me be relieved of my burdens. And the good news is, if that's how you feel, Jesus is speaking to you. If you're insisting on making your own way, and you feel that you really don't need God deep down inside, I fear that you are in the category of the wise and prudent, to whom Jesus says God has hidden the way forward. There's an essential characteristic of spirit here that Jesus is dealing with relative to those who will hear and those who will not hear. And we'll explore that a little bit further as we think about what Jesus now says. Now that we've identified the who not, the wise and prudent, the who that are, the babes, what is it Jesus is saying? What is it that Jesus is saying specifically to the babes? Look at verse 29. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. The essence of what Jesus is saying here is to what then? Okay, I'm lost, I'm confused, I'm empty, and I'm burdened. What now? Jesus says, come and take my yoke. I think there are two particular concepts, related concepts here in the idea of taking on the yoke of Christ. One is submission. The animal that wears the yoke is in submission to the one driving from behind. The yoke, if you will, places one under the control of the one driving the yoke and gives direction. And the other idea of yoke, I think, that's involved here is that of labor and work. Thus, we have the riddle. To those that are burdened and those that labor, Jesus says, come put a yoke on. It doesn't sound quite right, but that's what He's saying. Submission and work. Jesus calls the burdened to take on a burden. But the key is it's a different kind of burden. It's not the kind of burden that they have been bearing. I'd suggest first, what Jesus is not necessarily saying here is, I just want you to exchange labors. You can put these burdens aside and I'm going to lay some new burdens on you and you can go forward with all these new burdens. I would grant to you that coming to Jesus does involve a different way of living. It involves a different lifestyle. It does involve taking on a whole new perspective on the activities of life. But I really think what Jesus is saying here is, I'm calling you more to an outlook than anything else. Take my yoke upon you, He says, and learn from me. Learn from me. Learn about who I am. Learn about how I would have you live. Learn that perspective, and I think at the end of the day, it does change the labor and the work and the actions, the efforts of our lives. But essentially, Jesus says, learn true principles from me. Learn the true purpose of life from me. Learn it through me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, He says. Learn it from me. Learn it through me. And yes, it's taking on a yoke, but it's a whole different point of view. Let me give you an example of that. Turn to Colossians chapter 3, page 794 in the Pew Bible. Going back to our last segment auditorium class in Colossians, we studied Colossians and Philemon. And we noticed in the book of Colossians that Paul is giving some general instruction both to slaves as to how they should look at their servitude and to masters as to how they should consider their authority over their slaves. And then you turn to the book of Philemon, you have a real-life example. Onesimus is being the slave, being sent back to his master Philemon, both of whom are Christians now. Onesimus has escaped from his master Philemon, and through some sort of circumstance that's of curiosity but not explained in the Scriptures, Paul converts Onesimus. But he's an escaped slave. He's got to go back as an act of repentance. He's been of great value to Paul in his imprisonment, but Paul says, I didn't want to assume anything, Philemon. For example, that you would be pleased if I would keep your servant because he's doing me service. No, I wanted you to be able to offer that freely and willingly. I'm sending him back. But I tell you, Philemon is not receiving the same slave back that left. He's receiving back a child of God. Colossians 3 in verses 22 and following. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. In other words, Here's a slave who comes to Christ and takes on the yoke that Jesus says to take on. Well, he's not necessarily changing his lifestyle. He's still going to be a slave. But he's taking on the yoke of Christ's character and mind and outlook. He's got a whole new way to look at his master now. In fact, he's looking beyond his earthly master. He's looking to his master in heaven. And so when he now takes on his duties, same master, maybe the same duties, but he's a Christian now, he is doing it fearing God in verse 22, as to the Lord and not the men in verse 23, and the reminder that he serves the Lord in verse 24, and from him he will receive the reward of his inheritance. In other words, the slave now is going to have a whole different outlook on the burden that he bears. His work as a slave may still be unpleasant, but he's got a whole new way to define it now in the Lord. And so, Philemon is told, you're receiving one back that is spiritually profitable to you, not just profitable as a slave. And we learn from John Weaver in his historical treatment of slavery in that class that, if I remember the story right, slaves at this time or near this time perhaps were as expensive as a house to buy. That's how expensive a slave was. And so Philemon had a lot of lost revenue in Onesimus being gone. Onesimus coming back, he's not just coming back to some physical return on his investment, but Paul says now your servant is spiritually profitable to you. And I'm sending him back not that you might receive him as a slave, but receive him forever. Philemon, remember that. And I'm not sending him back only as a slave, but as a beloved brother. That outlook should affect the way Philemon would look at Onesimus. It should affect the way Onesimus should look at Philemon. And both of it comes from taking on the yoke of Christ and learning from him. And then Jesus in verse 30, back in Matthew 11, says, "For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Try telling that to a group of elders. If you're only looking at this from the standpoint of emotional burden and physical labor, you don't have to be an elder to understand this. If you ever worried over someone that you're struggling to study with and you're trying to take them from where they are to where they ought to be, or you're concerned about a congregation somewhere that's having difficulty, there's all kinds of emotional stresses and strains in serving the Lord. We talked about some of those last week in 2 Corinthians, talking about the burdens that Paul felt physically and all the things that he endured, and then emotionally what he felt for all of the churches. Jesus is not saying it's easy necessarily to be a Christian. I think what he's basically saying is, serving according to my will truly matches up with the purpose for which God made us. You know, in this world, we have a lot of burdens laid upon us. We have a lot of cares and concerns about the job and about war in Lebanon and Israel and war in Iraq and water mains breaking and whatever else is going on in the world. Just things that make life difficult. And as I said at the beginning of the lesson, at the end of the day, you solve one of those problems, you know, it's like shark's teeth. He breaks one off and another one pops up, and he breaks that off and another one pops up. There's our biology lesson for the day. The problems of life tend to do that. You solve one and another one pops up to take its place, or two or three. And there really never seems to be a this-worldly answer to that, a this-world solution to that. And so we plod along, weary and worn and dragging the burden of life. And Jesus says, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." We're suited for it. We're equipped to deal with some of those difficulties that come from bearing a yoke. It highlights the true purpose in life. All of these things that we bear at work, all the headaches and all the problems and all of the obstacles, and we work to overcome them and another one pops up. And at the end of our long career, with XYZ Corporation, just like shark's teeth, I retire and somebody pops up and takes my place. And on and on and on, Ecclesiastes says it goes. But you know, when I invest myself in the labors of the Lord, there's a reward for me. It's not about spinning my wheels. It's not about just dragging a pointless burden around, but it's about helping save souls and helping educate souls and helping solve spiritual problems for the souls of God's people and leading people who are not God's people to Him. Those are the things that matter, really, in this life. Our jobs matter. I mean, they provide a way for us to live in this world. But eternally, they don't matter that much. We need to be augmenting. We need to be adding to our earthly labors the spiritual labors that really make life worth living. And if we miss that part of life, then life is going to be a drag. Because deep down inside, we're going to know that it doesn't really amount to anything in the end. Jesus' yoke is easy and light, ultimately because it trusts in and submits to the will of God. When I take the yoke of Christ on and I begin pulling, I begin working with the Lord in submission to Him, it's so much easier then for me, having committed myself to the Lord, simply to trust in Him for what happens. I'm going to do my part. I'm going to try to pull that yoke along at the guidance of the Lord. But what a relief it is to be able to say, God's will be done. Lead me, guide me through that yoke where You want me to go through life. Help me to work and labor and do the things that You would have me to do. You know, and everything else pretty much doesn't matter. And so in that way, the yoke is easy and His burden is light. Well, what's the result of bearing this burden for the Lord? Again, sort of in a contradictory way, it seems. He says in verses 28 and then in 30, He says, I will give you rest. 28. Come to Me, all you who labor and are heavy laden. I will give you rest. But you got to put My yoke on. And then in verse 29, at the end of the verse, I am meek and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. We're looking for rest in life. We're looking to ease our burdens. We're looking for things to be a little bit easier. Oftentimes the problem is we're looking in the wrong places for it. I think the rest that Jesus says that we'll have, notice He says it's for your souls. You'll find rest for your souls. First of all, that rest is rest from toiling over the vain human philosophies that we've talked about earlier. The guidance and the advice and the experts that never seem to solve our problems. You know, we can have rest from that. You don't need to have 16 magazine subscriptions trying to figure out, you know, how to make life better. We can just revel in the truth of God. We can look into the Word of God and we can see the true principles, the true characteristics that I should have as an individual that really are what help me and put my soul at ease in this life. So we're going to find rest from vain human philosophy. And we're going to find rest from the rigors of an unresolved guilt that's on our conscience. Again, I think that's part of the burden, a large part of the burden that people carry around. They just don't identify it for what it is, and so they seek all these external or superficial ways to make themselves feel better. But coming to Jesus and taking on His yoke and living with Him and serving Him, being guided by Him, having the forgiveness of our sins, gives us the ultimate freedom and lightness of spirit. We are forgiven. And we don't have to drag that burden around anymore. And I think there's also rest. We mentioned those that were trying to achieve righteousness before God by their legalistic adherence to law. He talks about them in chapter 12. Paul talks about them in Romans chapter 10. Those who rejected the righteousness of God and were seeking to establish their own righteousness by keeping the law were freed from that burden as well. Martin's told us in talking about the Islamic outlook on righteousness that it literally is a scale. And the challenge for the Muslim is to pile more good deeds on the side of the scale than there are bad deeds on the other side, and literally their eternal fate will be weighed in the balance. And you know what that is? In a word, that is futility. That is futility. Because deep down inside, every one of us knows that we've never been able to offset the bad things that we've done. It just can't be done. But those who come to the Lord and put on His yoke are relieved from that burden. Well, let me ask you this, another point on the context. How did this whole discussion start in the first place? If you go back earlier in chapter 11, you remember that John the Baptist has been imprisoned, and it won't be long before he's going to be executed. His head is going to be cut off from his body. A faithful prophet who's done his work, now languishing in prison, and he sends some of his disciples to Jesus in verse 3 to ask Jesus, "Are you the coming one, or do we look for another?" I think it's been hard for people to grasp the fact that the same John who was so devoted and so faithful in introducing the Lord, so ascetic in his lifestyle, rejecting all the comforts that were afforded men at that time and living in the wilderness, that John might now be having some difficulty as his own life is beginning to wind down. Jesus answers this request from John, this plea, "Is it you?" Someone said, perhaps he doesn't see the axe laid at the root of the trees like he prophesied. He doesn't see the Pharisees being overthrown and they still are in power and imprison the Jews to their way of thinking. Whatever's going on in John's mind, he's needing some reassurance. Verse 4, Jesus says, "Go and tell John the things which you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, and the lame walk, and the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. And also tell John, and blessed is he who is not offended because of me." It appears that for this moment, John doesn't have the rest in his soul that he would like to have. And I want you to notice the answer given to John. It really didn't have anything to do with John. And what John did, he didn't say, "Go tell John you did a good job and you prophesied well and you said things that were true." And he didn't say that. You know what Jesus does in answering John? He points John to himself. "You go tell John what I am doing. You go tell John what the credentials of heaven are that are being acted out before men by me." He pointed John to himself. And as we draw the lesson to a close, that's what I'll suggest to you is we need to, in times of burden and trouble and toil and care, we need to come to the Lord and accept His invitation for us to come. Again, it might be that you came here burdened and weary and confused. Let me ask you, are you trying to wear the yoke of Christ and the yoke of the world at the same time? To ask the question if you came here burdened and confused and weary is not to speak only to non-Christians. You might be a child of God and came here with a heaviness of heart. Is it possible that you put the yoke of Christ on and then took the yoke of the world and put that on top of it and you're trying to pull both? That won't work. We've got to surrender the yoke of the world. We've got to put that off and wear the yoke of Christ and that alone. Secondly, have you surrendered to the will of God? And are you content to let that will carry you down future paths of life? Or are you trying to engineer everything so life turns out to be the way that you want it to be? Let go of that. Trust the will of God. Wear the yoke of Christ. Submit to Him. He is meek and lowly in heart. He Himself has submitted to the yoke of God. Submit to that yoke and let Him drive you where He wants you to go. To try to make our own way, to make it happen for ourselves, is futility. We're just not that powerful in this world. Have you allowed discouragement to persuade you to cast off the yoke altogether? It might be that you started pulling with the yoke of Christ, and somewhere along the way, you've become discouraged and you put it off. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 58, "Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord." That's what Paul told the servants in Colossians 3. Your labor for your earthly master, but done in reference to Christ, is not in vain. The reward will come. It'll come in eternity, and it'll be of far more value than anything that it costs you in this world. So, our riddle at the beginning: how are the burden given a burden that relieves their burdens? Well, this is how. The burdened by the things of this world, by sin, by self-righteousness, by the futility of this life, are unburdened by taking on the burden of Christ. Put my yoke on. It's easy and light compared to what you're going to try to be pulling in this world. It's easy and light, and you have true reward and rest for your soul. Again, you notice that Jesus is pointing all mankind in that statement to Himself. Take my yoke upon you. Learn from me. I am meek and lowly in heart. He's the one that's going to provide rest. The answer to the burdens and the problems and the cares of this world are in taking on the yoke of Christ, living for Him, submitting to Him, working for Him. That's where we're going to find the true meaning and purpose of life and true rest for our souls. Can we help you with that this morning? Maybe you've come tired of dragging the load around. Can we help you unhitch it and get you hitched up to the right thing? And that would be to Jesus Christ, based on your commitment to Him with all of your heart. We can help you. Would you just come while we stand and sing?